It's 9:30. It's time to learn Perkei Avot. Yeah. And welcome everybody, Boker Tov. Okay, we'll continue as we do where we left off last week, which was, depending on your version of the Mishnah, it's sort of the middle of the second last Mishnah Perkei Avot. In my Mishnah, it's Yud Zayin, the end of the third chapter. And we're learning about Rav Elezer ben Azariah. Last week, talked about him, you know, in Kemach Ein Torah. That was the last thing we left off, you know, without flour, which is normally translated as money, without your, but it really means without your bread. That we didn't see. In other words, without your material needs taken care of. I guess that's sort of the same thing as money, not exactly. Imen kemach ein Torah. And by the way, I don't think I mentioned this last week, or maybe mentioned in the past. Most great works of Jewish literature and learning were produced with wealth. In other words, it's not true that when Jews were really poor and that's where they could really learn, because, you know, they weren't caught up in the material rat race and, you know, they sat and learned. I've mentioned a number of times that in the Eastern Europe, only the wealthy could learn in yeshivot. Almost anybody who learned in Volozhin and Slobodka and Mir and all these yeshivot came from wealthy families. Shaul Stamper, I think, discusses that in his books on the subject. People couldn't afford it. You went to work at 12 and 14, you became an apprentice. So there were families that, Baruch Hashem, some families had lots of money and whatever, they could afford to send a kid who was bright, who was super, super bright, to an advanced yeshiva. But most, not all, but most. The Soloveitchik family was quite poor, but many were quite wealthy. But we know, period, the great things of Jewish history, like Rav Yosef Karo producing the Shulchan Aruch in Sfat, when there was sort of a golden age after the Spanish expulsion. It's very hard to produce things when you're worried about your material and safety. So Kemach is really, you want to take it in its broader sense, without comfort, it's impossible. It'll be very hard to produce great things of learning. Rav Yehuda Hanasi, the editor of the Mishnahs, is well known, was very wealthy. He didn't use his wealth on himself, but he was a very wealthy person. Rav Yehuda Hanasi, very friendly with the Romans. And perhaps that's not a coincidence that it was he who became the final editor of the Mishnah. And the Talmud Yerushalmi was never properly edited. The reason there's no Daf Yomi, at least not yet, on the Yerushalmi, and almost nobody learns Yerushalmi except for, you know, the Yechidei Skula, exceptional people, it's very difficult to learn the Yerushalmi. So it was never completed properly. It was never properly edited because there was, you know, persecution by the third, fourth century. Who was left in the land of Israel who could produce the Talmud Yerushalmi? The Talmud Bavli was edited really for hundreds of years. Even the Mishnah, wasn't Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi woke up one day and he said, "Let's edit the Mishnah." It was a 50, 60 year process, beginning with Rabbi Akiva. There were, as being mentioned by scholars, you know, the Mishnah contains about 5% of the material of the teachings of the Tanaim. Some were repetitive teachings, you know, they taught the same material on Sukkah here and this Beit Medrash and there, but it was overlap, but there was, you know, our Mishnah contains 5% or so of everything there. It was a massive job to edit it and took many, many years. The Talmud also, we say how Ravina and Ravashi were the editors. First of all, they died not so close to each other, I think 50, 60 years apart. And then the Savaraim, they were really the ones who edited, or this, the Stamaim, the, perhaps before them, the sort of anonymous layer of the Gemara, they added in. The Aramaic is really done by that later editing thing. In other words, rabbis would just talk like very quickly to each other. And then the Stama, that's sort of the last period of the stages of the Talmud, they would add, he said to him, and he asked him, Meitvei, they would throw in these words so it flows much better. And then the Savaraim, for another 100 years, edited it. And we know they're Talmudic passages, which are post-Amoraitic. The Amoraim were the rabbis who are considered the rabbis of the Gemara, but it continued. And even the Gaonim a little bit edited. So works take many, many years. When there's, you know, persecution, you got to write in a hurry, not going to have that. So the Yerushalmi suffered that fate. The Talmud Yerushalmi was never properly edited and properly done. And because of that, Rashi didn't comment on it. And the classical commentaries did not deal with the Yerushalmi. The Rambam of all the Rishonim is the one who has apparently used it the most. Rambam was Yechid Bimino. There's nobody like the Rambam. And he doesn't quote his sources, but the commentaries point out this is from a Yerushalmi. Often when he would contradict the Talmud, and everyone asked, where did the Rambam like get this from? Why is he contradicting the Talmud? So later scholars would point out that he is actually quoting some obscure passage in the Yerushalmi Talmud, in the Jerusalem Talmud, and whatever. So it's important. Wealth is, I don't know wealth, but security, middle class, whatever you want to call it, is an important ingredient in being able to produce Torah leadership, literature and Torah scholarship. There are, of course, many exceptions. Perhaps I remember in high school being taught the most famous exception, I know the most famous is the Minchat Chinuch, Rav Yosef Babad, I believe was his name. Minchat Chinuch is sort of a commentary on the show, on the Sefer Chinuch. He lived, I don't know, 150 years ago. The Minchat Chinuch, he was extreme. It's a fascinating, it's sort of an analysis of the 613 mitzvot. And he was so poor, he couldn't afford the paper and the pen. So he made up, you know, acronyms. He would make up Roshei Tevot, you know, Aleph, Dalet, Hey, Zayin. He would just make them up because he didn't have enough paper to write what he wanted to write. So he had to write small and make up things. That's what they say. Nunu. Anyways, the Mishnah says, Imein Kemach Ein Torah, but if there's... but if there's no Torah, then the Kemach isn't worth very much. The Kemach is only a means to the end. Okay, let's continue. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah continues. Huaya omer, kocha shechachmato merubo mimasav. Anybody whose wisdom is greater than his actions, lemahu dome, what is he compared to? Le'ilan she'anav merubim v'sharashav mu'atim. To a tree that has beautiful leaves, and you know, wow, you know, it's now's the time, you know, you walk in the street now from week to week, day to day, you see the blooming trees, quite beautiful. Actually, this is a really, really beautiful time of year from that point of view. But the roots of the trees are very little. And the wind can come and blow it up, and the tree can be destroyed. So, in other words, it's very nice. It's very nice that somebody knows a lot and he's very smart, but if that's not tied into action, it's pretty worthless, or the tree's going to get blown over. Now, we've already learned this Mishnah six Mishnah ago. Rav Chananya ben Chanina ben Dosomer, Akosha Masav Murubi Michachmato, Chachmato Mikayemet. Whosever's actions are greater than his wisdom, his wisdom will have a purpose, but if his wisdom, kosha chachmato merubami masav, whosever wisdom is greater than his masav, ain't chachmato mikayemet. His wisdom will not endure. In other words, the trees will be uprooted by the wind. And that's what he continues. If your actions are greater, you're doing more. You do more than you speak. Asema, you know, speak little and do a lot. Daber ma'ata say harbe. That's even like a tree. It doesn't have the beautiful branches as much. But its roots are very strong. Even if all the winds in the world, if you have a hurricane, that tree will not fall down in the hurricane. The way the Mishnah portrays it, it doesn't move from its place. That tree is rooted, literally, and it will not be able to move. That's a person whose actions are greater than his knowledge. And then the Gemara quotes the first pasuk in Tehilim, Vayaka eitz shatul al mayim. It's like a tree that is, you know, by the river. Nothing's going to hurt it. The heat and all the nature will have it grow beautifully and give up beautiful fruit. So the first question I alluded to is, why do we have to say this again? So you can argue he's adding a more dramatic explanation of it. But we could have put the dramatic explanation the first time around. We didn't have to sort of say it twice. So the truth of the matter is, I think this is a basic point in Pirkei Avot and Agada in general, and non-legal sections in general. You know, we didn't discuss why is Pirkei Avot called Pirkei Avot. It's a very funny name. And who are the Avot? So I don't know. When I think Avot, I think of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. That's Pirkei Avot. So clearly, we're not talking about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. I think Avram is mentioned once. The Mishnah later on distinguishes between the students of Bilam and the students of Abraham. But that's it. So the Avot are like the Avot Olam. These are our great sages. In other words, Pirkei Avot is not so much about learning a subject. It's not like Shabbos or Psachim or Brachot. The other tractates of the Talmud each have a theme. Yuma, we started Yuma this week, and Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, Baba Kama, you know, torts. Everything has a theme. What's the theme of Pirkei Avot? So you're getting ethics. Okay, very nice, but that's not what it is true, but it's not really what we say in the name. It's the teachings of our sages. So the rabbis were much, Pirkei Avot is a collection of the teaching of our greatest sages. So great sages often say the same thing. That's, you know, if you want to, I don't know, maybe, you know, you go to funeral and the eight eulogies all touch on one aspect of this person that's, you know, it's probably true. You know, like if people describe somebody, if they all use the same terminology, so it becomes, that's pretty good. So then you have that very often. You have, let's say, in the first chapter in Pirkei Avot, you have twice, two different, Aseh Lecha Rav, that famous comment, make yourself a rabbi. We have that throughout Pirkei Avot and throughout Agadah, their ideas are repeated over and over again, because it's not so much to learn a topic, it's to learn the teachings of our sages. And the truth of the matter, that's the whole idea of the Torah Shebaal Peh. We discussed last week, the Pirkei Avot is the handing down of our tradition. And we know that the main reason, I don't know the main reason, but probably the main reason we wanted the oral law to be oral. In other words, you know, I teach at Chan, and the kids ask me this all the time. Like, why is none of this stuff written? Like, you know, I'm dealing generally with non-observant kids, you know, and they want to know, like, where do the rabbis make this up from? Like it's not written in the Torah. Like, how do the, you know, where does it come from? And it's a legitimate question. None of the laws of Shabbos are written in the Torah. What do I do? Because it's next to the Mishkan. You learn, but the idea was that the purpose, Torah has to be passed down from teacher to student. It's a living example. We don't want to be people of the book. That's the sort of ironic thing. That's not us. We're meant to be the people of the teacher, the people of the student. We're the students, teacher, the relationship. And that's a living example. And we all know that. The book knowledge is very limiting in a way. We have no choice, so we wrote it down. But so Pirkei Avot is not so much a particular subject, as we know. It's all over the place. But it's really the teachings of our great sages. Those are the Avot. So the fact that there are repetitive teachings is quite, is what to be expected. So you'll have it, different people saying the same idea. And of course, it always reinforces it. Now, here the comparison to tree. Of course, that's a very Jewish idea that, ki adam eitz hasadeh. That's a pasuk in Sefer Dvarim. We're compared to a tree. We know there's a law, you can't cut down trees. Bal tashki, the law of destroying like property. It's said by trees. That's where it comes from. And it's said in a time of war. If the Jewish people go to war, they can't just carpet bomb a city and destroy everything. That's not allowed in Jewish law. That's can't destroy all the trees. And that's, again, another example of how the Torah works. The Torah generally tells us laws where we least expect them. In other words, I might think that, okay, in a time of, I can't chop down a tree in my whatever in the backyard. That's an interesting question, what happens. Can't do what I want with trees. But in a war, don't ask questions. Shoot now and ask questions later. So, but the Torah says, no, it's dafka by war. It's the same thing. The laws of how one treats a wife is said when you marry a slave. A slave, don't have to treat them as well. The Torah very often, the idea that you have to bury somebody right away is written in the Torah by a murderer. When it says that when the court puts the murderer to death, so they can't let his body lie overnight. You have to bury right away. So you think, okay, normal people have to bury right away. A murderer, let the body rot for a little while. You don't say that. Even the scum of the earth have to be buried in dignity. They too were created in the image of God. So that's a very common idea. But that's the notion. But trees, we're like trees, and perhaps that's the imagery, growth and fruit and bearing. I think we all understand the image of the tree. Now, I'll give perhaps a historical reason or maybe a analysis. Maybe you can take it or leave it. Why is Rav Elazar? This is Rav Elazar Ben Azariah talking. We spoke about him last week. The met him at the Seder, the famous like compromise candidate appointed as the Nasi. So I did not mention last week. I mentioned he was a compromise candidate when Rav Gamliel had insulted Rav Yoshua three times, and the rabbi said enough already, and they impeached him temporarily. So they didn't appoint Rabbi Kiva. He had no yichis. Nobody's going to listen to him. And they didn't appoint Rabbi Yeshua because that's too much a slap in the face. They needed a compromise candidate. They said they went to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So why did they go to him? So the Gemara gives their three reasons they went to him. Hu chacham, he's smart. He's wise. Hu ashir, he's wealthy. Like it or not, if you don't have money, people don't listen. Or maybe I'll put it this way. If you have money, people listen to you a lot more. The golden rule. What can I tell you? So who chacham? And there is a halacha. The kohen gadol has to be wealthy. The king has to be wealthy. People respect wealth. That's just the way the world works. So he was a chacham. He was a shir. Again, you know, great rabbis often became great because they came from wealthy homes. Who asiri le'ezra? And he's the 10th generation descendant of the great Ezra HaSofer. So the first thing, okay. That's good. I'm glad they said he's smart and wealthy and not he's wealthy and smart. They, you know, they put hu chacham. And interesting, they put that he his great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. That's last. Who your great-grandfather is, who cares? I mean, I don't mean who cares, but who cares? Like, that doesn't say anything about you, as everybody knows. What says about you more is who your grandchildren are. So that's the last thing. But people respect Yichus, and we all know that also. That people, ooh, he's a descendant, you know, his grandfather was this or what, you know, people, or he's a Rockefeller. Whoa, people are impressed by that. So those were the three things the Gemara says why they chose Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Of course, the real reason, he didn't have any baggage. He was young. He didn't have any enemies. That's what they needed, a peacemaker, so to speak. But it could be that Rav Elazar ben Azariah is responding to that. The first thing they said about Rav Elazar is he's smart. And Rav Elazar is saying, you know what? Being a chacham is not so important. What's much more important is what you do, not how much you know, not how much Gemara you know, and it's the action. And this truth matter is a difficult concept. It's a concept that I think many Jews, especially in today's world, there seems to be an emphasis that learning is the most important thing that one can do, that learning is more important than action. And here the Mishnah says the opposite, you know, the actions have to come before any learning or as a result. Now, truth of the matter, like if Pirkei Avot are the teachings of our great rabbis, so of course not, our rabbis don't agree on many, many things. So you're going to have, not everybody is necessarily going to agree. These represent interesting opinions. So there is a famous, I don't know famous, there's a discussion in the Gemara in Kiddushin, the end of the first chapter in Kiddushin, that then theoretically talks about marriage, that's a masechet. So the Gemara quotes that Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva had a debate. So Rabbi Tarfon said that ma'aseh, atif ma'aseh, that it's better, actions are much more important than learning. And Rabbi Akiva answered, nope, Talmud is better. To learn is better. Studying Talmud is much better. That's a very strange argument. How in the world can somebody say that learning is more important than action? That's the view of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva says learning is more important. Now, again, I understand where Rabbi Akiva is coming from. Rabbi Akiva spent 24 years in Kolo, or I don't know what, his wife, you know, that's an example of somebody who was very wealthy, who became very poor, and nonetheless continued to learn Torah. The famous story, Rabbi Akiva married, I met this, you know, beautiful wife, Rachel, and will you marry me? And if you go learn, I'll marry you. And he goes to learn her father, Kalva Savua. That wasn't his name. We've mentioned many times, names are not people's real names. 95% of the time in the Bible and in rabbinic literature, names are not real names. They're ideas that tell you who the person is. Kalva Savua means a satiated dog, a kelev. Kalva Savua, the savata, he's very satiated. So the Gemara says anybody who is as hungry as a dog went to Kalva Savua, they'd end up satiated like anything. He could supply the whole city. He was so wealthy. And he cut off his daughter. I don't want my daughter marrying an ignoramus. And they cut her off, and Rabbi Akiva goes and he learns, and the Gemara, she cuts her hair off and she sells her hair. They have no money. But Rabbi Akiva is an exception. He's a We shouldn't be like Rabbi Akiva. And don't leave your wife to go learn for 12 years or 1 year or 1 week without permission. You can't do that. Gemara has actually a whole discussion about that. How much and when and if a husband can leave the family and go learn Torah. That's in Kiddushin too. But anyways, so that's what Rabbi Akiva. So I understand Rabbi Akiva. And then he became the beginning of the editor of the Mishnah. He became the one who saved Judaism in spirit to Omer. Torah would have died, and except he reinvigorated Torah. And he, you know, so Rabbi Akiva, to him, without learning, there's no Judaism. He's not saying actions aren't important, but, you know, you're in yeshiva now, whatever, you have to learn. Don't worry about doing. So I kind of understand that. But how can anybody sort of logically say that learning is greater than action? So you could say what happens next. So the Gemara, this is a debate in Kiddushin. Rabbi Tarfon follows the view of here, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, they lived around the same time. Rabbi Tarfon was actually older. And he said, Masim is greater. And Rabbi Akiva says, learning is greater. And then the Gemara says, Neno Kulam, everybody. The consensus of the rabbis was that, anybody know what the consensus of the rabbis was? Consensus was learning is greater. Shetalmud mevi lidei masa. It's one of these like contradictory, self-contradictory statements. Talmud adif, Talmud is better. It's better to study because study leads to action. So that means action is better, no? Talmud is better because Talmud leads to action. So what the Gemara apparently is saying is action has to be informed with intelligence. You can't just do, you know, that's people, you have to learn. In order to do properly, you have to learn. So yeah, it's like, I think I mentioned a friend of mine when I was in yeshiva with Yeshiva Hakoto with him. So I may have mentioned this story once. A very, very brilliant friend. He's now a radiologist in Philadelphia. And he won Rav Avigdor Nevinsol. There was the Rav of the Old City, Tzadik Gamur, and Talmid Chacham. He recognized my friend's genius, I would say, and he learned with him. Bechavrusa, they had a chavrusa every day for an hour. Rav Avigdor Nevinsol and my friend, and my friend had done 2 years at Columbia, and he was going to go back for a third year at Columbia after the year. We were in Hakotel, Yeshivat Hakotel, and Rav Nevinsol said to him, Rav Nevinsol was trying to convince him to stay in yeshiva, but to going back to university. So he said to him, what would have happened if the Ksor HaChoshen had gone to university? You know, the great scholar. So my friend said, maybe a little chutzpahdik, but my friend said, he would have, we would have discovered the theory of relativity a little bit earlier. So no. But then he said, what's more important? I remember, so he was giving a whole talk, Rav Nevinsol, I respond to this about what's more important, the study of Musar? That's really the story I should have told. The study of Musar or to learn Gemara or to learn. You know, Musar, there was a whole debate. Should we focus on the study of ethics or just let's learn Gemara? That was the whole debate. So he said, if you only have an hour to learn, what should you do? Should you learn Musar or should you learn Gemara? So he said, you should learn Musar. Because if you learn Musar, you'll find out you have more than an hour to learn. You know, you'll find out you have more time to learn. So that's what the Talmud is saying here, I think. Learning is more important because learning leads to action. You think the way to do action is you have to learn. You have to learn. So really, action is greater. That seems to be the conclusion. Nanu kulam, everybody said action is greater than learning. Although it's very strange. The Gemara then continues with the view of Rabbi Yossi, that learning is more important, and the Talmud ends. And the Talmud quotes a verse to back him up, and that's the end of the discussion. And as is often common, the Talmud itself doesn't tell you the conclusion, because the Talmud also isn't a legal text. It has legal material, but the Talmud is a discussion of the rabbis. Pirkei Avot are the teachings of the rabbis. The Talmud is a continuation of the teaching of the rabbis. So they're presenting different views, but it's kind of a fascinating argument. What is the relationship between learning and action, and what do we focus on? And of course, the answer is it depends who you are, what stage of life you're on. Younger people have to focus more on learning than on action. If you're a Rav Soloveitchik, you should focus more on learning. Although we all know the great, great rabbinic leaders, the Chafetz Chaim, and all the, they're famous not for their learning, they're famous for their actions. We call the Chafetz Chaim, we don't call them the Mishnah Berurah. We call them the Chafetz Chaim, because the Chafetz Chaim is a book not to speak Lashon Hara. That's more important than any halakhi wrote in the Mishnah Berurah. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, they say the problem with Rav Chaim Soloveitchik is that he was so brilliant that people talk about his brilliance and not about his great chesed. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was known as the greatest, Rav Soloveitchik's rampart, the greatest performer of kindness. I mentioned, you know, many, many times that Rav Chaim was famous. That's when girls got pregnant and Brisk or other people, you know, don't think everybody was so righteous in Eastern Europe. And that's people who were, you know, I'd say, as we say, into drugs, off the dare, whatever terms you want to use, they'd go to Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim would stay with them, would help them. He wasn't, and he was famous, you know, the famous story on the Pesach, you know, the woman comes, can you use milk for the 4 cups of wine, and gives her 100 rubles. And they said, what are you giving 100 rubles for? Wine costs 5 rubles. So, well, if she's asking about milk, I mean, she doesn't have any meat for the Seder. So I got it. So his brilliance and his chesed came together. But Rav Chaim was a tremendous Baal Chesed. Mentioned also many times, they wouldn't let the shul daven on Yom Kippur when the Bundist was arrested who ate on Yom Kippur. That was Rav Chaim, the greatness of action. So, it is today there seem, I would say, what I see, maybe I'm wrong, but from what I see, I think we have in a certain sense an overemphasis on learning and an underemphasis on action. What do we do with all this learning? All the hundreds of thousands of people learning Daf Yomi is wonderful, but if all the hundreds of thousands of people would learn about business ethics and, you know, Jews should be a Kiddush Hashem and everything they do. I don't know, Bernie Madoff died this week. So maybe it's a little bit on my mind, you know, obviously he was an extreme horrific example, but I don't have to tell you, this is an area where most people are weak. The temptations are great and it's very difficult. You need a lot of money to live in North America, paid for day school education. And it's hard. So the temptations to cut corners are great. I don't know. Maybe we put more focus there. I don't know. All I'm saying is the Mishnah raises the issue. And the sources seem to say actions are more important than our learning. Okay, let's move on. Have there been any questions? Okay. You can interrupt me. Anybody would like to interrupt me or disagree with me, I very much welcome people who disagree with me. Okay, Rav Elezer, that's how we learn. That's the whole time arguing with each other. Rav Elezer Chismumer, the last Mishnah in the third Perek of Pirkei Avot. This is a difficult Mishnah. I will explain why in a moment. And as you come to this Mishnah, say, what in the world is going on here? Kinim upitche nida hein hein gufei halachot. Kinim. What are kinim? Kinim are birds. So there's a masachet in the Talmud without Gemara in Seder Kodshin called kinim. I learned it once. I didn't understand one word. It's 3 chapters. It's, you know, the Torah we have this week's Parsha. I believe, right? A woman gives birth, so she's got to bring a korban chatat and a korban olah. Why does a woman who has birth have to bring a sin offering? That's a fascinating question. That's not our topic, but I'll throw in the beautiful word of teaching of Nechama Leibowitz. I believe I heard this from her. And unfortunately, as you all know, she herself didn't have any biological children. She had thousands and thousands of children. Vishinantum Levanecha, teach your children, these are your students. Those types of children, she had many thousands. But biological children, she did not have. And she once said she would give it all up to have children. No, that's a, what can I say? So Nechama Leibowitz said that the woman who has a child has to give a sin offering because, you know, when a kid is born, I remember when my wife was pregnant with our eldest. So Dr. Judah, those who live in Toronto know who Dr. Judah is, I believe. Great Talmud Chacham, a urologist. So he came over, we saw him once and he came over, he said, being pregnant with your first child is the greatest thing. You've got inside your stomach a nuclear physicist, a Bakian expert in the entire Talmud, the greatest, you know, communal activist in the world, everything, because all your dreams. And then, you know, kids are born and it doesn't quite work out exactly as life gets in the way, as we would say, you know, when you're young and idealistic. So he said, that's the problem. The woman, you know, we have so much we can do for our child and we don't live up to it. So the woman has to know as soon as she has the child, she brings a sin offering. that sort of to remind yourself on how to raise this child to be, you know, as pure as possible. Nunu. But the Torah then says if she can't afford it, it's very can't afford it. So she brings two birds, right? Achad lechatat v'achad l'adat. We're going to read it tomorrow. So nu, you have one bird as a chatat and one a bird, you know, they fly away. So the bird flies away, and how do you replace it? It's all this super complicated mathematical formulas. You have two birds, and one mixes with this one. Anyway, so kinim these laws. Now, of course, these laws have zero applicability in our time. Nonetheless, Rabbi Elazar, you know, Chisma is a upitche nida. Pitche nida. It's also a funny expression. The openings of the nida. So that these are hein. These and these. This is the wow. This is the essence of Torah. This is the goof. This is the body of Jewish law. So I kind of get why pitche nida. I more than kind of get. I understand why to say the laws of nida are the essence of the Torah, because without the laws of nida we can't live. Right, the first thing you have to build in a community is a mikvah. Without these laws, a husband and wife can't be intimate, can't have children. I mean, this is a big question. So one of the kids in school asked me this week, what happened to the mikvah and corona? Were women going to the mikvah and corona? I don't know if the kid fully understood that Jewish law forbids like total intimacy if the woman hasn't gone to mikvah. I don't know that the kid fully understood that, but it was just a fascinating, you know, question that what did people do going to mikveh in Corona? So we understand a little bit why pitchei nida is gufei halachot, but why in the world is kinim, the laws of birds and sacrifice? These are the essence. This is the gufei halachot. This is the main part of the Torah. To gufodu gematriot. Tikufot, those are the seasons. How to calculate our calendar, let's say. Ugematriot, you know, gematria of this, you know, all the different, that's like, you know, parparot lechachma. That's spices. That's not so important. That's much less important. I also don't understand that one. The gematrias, I understand. Gematria is not so important. Yeah, okay. That's parparot lechachma. Tikufot, that's really important. We'll get there in a second. So I have a few ideas to throw out, but the commentary sort of addressed the question, I think. But if anybody has any ideas, I'd love to hear what you have to say. But I'll throw out, okay, so one idea that I don't like, although some of the commentaries mentioned, I think, is kinim doesn't refer to the loss of sacrifices of bird. It refers to the mitzvah of shiluach hakan. You know, that you have to send it's birds, but the different mitzvah birds. And we all know this is one of the very few mitzvot in the Torah that were promised a long life, to send away the mother bird before you take the, you know, chicks. The Eim Rovet said al Habanim, you got to shalech the shalech at the Eim. So maybe kinim, so the Torah preps long life. And perhaps the Torah is teaching us we don't really know what the rewards are. You know, who would think, what's such an important mitzvah to say? I mean, it's nice, of course. The Ramban says it's an act of cruelty to take away the mother bird, you know, take away the kids and the mother bird. It's even for animals, that's an act of cruelty. But to think that that's the most important or the essence of the Torah could be. But the Torah says, no, that's exactly the point. You get long life. So you could say it's that. Okay. Now, I don't think that's really what kinim really means. I mean, it's connected, but the kinim are the laws of sacrifices, not applicable, the bird sacrifices. Okay, so some want to say the Bartanura, the Rav Avadim Bartanura, the main commentary in the Mishnah, most important commentary in the Mishnah, says they're the Ikar Torah Shabbat. That's a very strange statement. This is the Ikar, the main thing. Shemekablim aleh haschar. Now that's perhaps is limiting, for which we get a reward. This is the main parts of the Torah for which we get a reward. It's not that it's the main, I think what he's saying, not that this is the main part of the Torah, but this is the main reward when we learn Torah. Why is this the main reward for getting Torah? So one could say, I just told you, Kinim is like impossible to understand. I mean, maybe for other people, but for me, I haven't looked at it in many years. If you ever notice that when they give out the Mishnayos, so the ones that are left at the end, you know, Kalim and nobody wants to learn this stuff. It's short. Kinim is short. So you could say, Lepum Sara Agra, we get reward for the effort. So you have to put in a lot of effort. And therefore, it's not that it's so important. It doesn't even apply anymore. But we get rewarded for the effort that we do, because results is up to God. But all we can do is put in effort. So the more effort we put in, that's true in anything. Anything we do, it's the effort we put in, the result that you can never control the result. So that's one thing now. And Nida. Well, so this is, there's a beautiful Gemara passage in Masechet Brachot where David HaMelech says he's a chassid. He's wanting to tell God, why am I a very pious person? So King David gives two things. First one has to do with all the kings are sleeping into the morning. Everybody, the king, you know, we say Kriyat Shema till a quarter of the day because kings sleep until a quarter of the day. People in the time of the Talmud used to get up at the crack of dawn. So there is an opinion. I always say there's certain opinions in halakha that, thank God, we don't accept. So there's an opinion in the Mishnah, first prayer in Brachot. The latest time to say Kriyat Shema is at sunrise. The Shachbacha of Kumecha, when you get up. You have to say Kriyat Shema. Get up. Who's asleep at sunrise? Nobody's asleep at sunrise. Get up at the crack of dawn. So thank God we don't follow that. I mean, maybe you don't think. I think that to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning in the summer to say Shema. So we lazy bums, me lazy bum, where I'm allowed to say Kriyat Shema till a quarter of the day. So the earliest in Toronto Kriyat Shema ever is about 9:20. Never in New York, it's a little bit earlier. We're west of New York, whatever. So we never, okay, 9:20, that's not hard to do. So, and why? Because kings sleep in, and Kol Bnei Israel, all the Jewish people, we're like kings. We're God as our king. We're Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goyim Kadosh. That's why we can say Kriyat Shema so late in the morning. So David HaMelech says, all the kings in the world, they sleep in, they do this. I get up and I sing Shirat V'Tishbachot. I sing the praises of God. Tehilim Kol Hanshama Hallelujah, Hallelujah. So I'm very pious. And then he says something else. He says, you know why I'm a chassid? When the kings get up, they sit and they relax and they, what do? They have a partying. What do? I get my hands dirty. Yadot meluchlachot. My hands are filthy with blood. The blood of the woman who come to ask questions, can they be with their husbands? Is this damnida? What is this? So I'm a chassid. I'm a great person because I get my hands dirty and I help the woman that they can go to mikveh, whatever, they can be intimate with their wives. That's why he's a chassid, a great person. So perhaps that's what the Mishnah is saying. Pitrei nidah, of course, that's to allow a husband and wife to be intimate. That's gufei Torah, of course. But that's how David HaMelech praises himself. And perhaps, you know, this expression, pitrei nidah, the openings of Nida, I don't know what that means. So Pitchei Nida. So perhaps this is what it means. A petach means an opening. When a person takes a vow, so we're going to get there in a second. A person takes a vow. So we know Yom Kippur, Kol Nidrei. We annul our vows. And on Rosh Hashanah, Erev Rosh Hashanah, we do Heter Nidarim. So what kind of a ridiculous thing is this? I say something, I didn't mean it. What do you mean didn't mean it? Don't say it. So hold on. So there are two ways. There's what we call a petach and charata. We find an opening. You didn't really mean it. Did you know that your vow? I didn't know my vow. Okay. I didn't know my vow encompassed that case. Had I known, I wouldn't have done it. So we find a petach. We find a way to permit. That's what petach. So pitchei nida, the role of the rabbi or the yoetzet halacha in modern times, the role of the yoetzet is to help is to allow the woman, is to open up. Pitchei nida. So nida. So that's perhaps one idea. Now, just to straight, we were talking before on the difficulty of nida. So we know that maybe not everybody knows. In the Torah, there's a major difference between a nida and a zava. Anida is basically, with very simply, Anida is a woman who bleeds when she is supposed to bleed, and a Zava is a woman who bleeds when she isn't. The Gemara is a complicated discussion, 7 days, 11 days, not important now. And it's not important in practice anyway, because these laws were so complicated, and the rabbis declared that everybody becomes a Zava. We don't have a Nida anymore. Everybody becomes a Zava. Now, who cares? What's the difference if you're a Nida or Zava? So there's a major, major difference that impacts on all observant people's lives in a very, very major way. That a Nida goes to mikvah on the seventh day. If she stops bleeding on the sixth day, she goes to mikvah on the seventh day. That's it, Gemara. And a Zava has to wait 7 clean days. So that's a huge difference. And that, of course, by Benot Yisrael, Hechmir Olatzman, the daughters of Israel, seems that this was the woman on their own. It's very funny and strange in a sense. It was not a rabbinic decree. It was Benot Yisrael, Afilu Roat Tipatam Kechardal. Even if they see a speck of blood like a mustard seed, Yoshvar Alav Shivat Nikim, they sit for 7 clean days. So that's also part of the difficulty of these laws. And we know we get rewarded for the extra difficulty. So that's also part of the Ein Hein Gufei Halachot. But the role is to find a leniency. And that's what David HaMelech praises himself for doing. You can also say, and that's what David said, Liadot Meluch Lachot Bedam, my hands are dirty with blood. The role of the rabbi is to get his hands, to roll up his hands, and to, you know, get the hands dirty. You know, certainly, it's not for me, you know, that's other people. You got to open up the car, the car mechanic. You got to be willing to get really involved. The Tiferet Yisrael said it's miguneh. You know, even talking about it, some people are a little uncomfortable. It's miguneh. It's like disgusting, you know, talk about all these laws, and though, you know, it's done, people are very, very, very private about it. So that is but that's the point of the Torah. Even things that don't apply, that's what some of the, even things that don't apply, and even things that are sort of not nice, that's the essence of Torah. And some want to say that, in other words, the Tiferet Yisrael says, you know, Kinim and Pichinida, I'm allowed to make them my main focus of study. He basically turns the Mishnah on its head. In other words, the Mishnah says this is the main part of study. Tiferet Yisrael, what do you mean the main part? It means I can make it. He adds the word, I'm allowed to make it the main part of study. And this sort of ties in a little bit to what we're doing. What's the relationship between study and action? And in a certain sense, if you explain like this, he's responding. He says, no, kinim are not applicable. But that can be the essence of Torah. Because the purpose of Torah, why? And now I'll begin to answer the question I said before. How can somebody say learning Torah is more important than action? How can you say such a thing? So you could say, as we explained, that they don't really say that. Learning Torah is more important because it leads to action. But you have to lead Torah. You have to learn the Musar to know that you have more than an hour a day to learn. Okay, I can hear that. But the other thing is, no. There's an independent mitzvah, and that's how it's understood today in the yeshiva world. Learning Torah is itself an action. In other words, when we say Talmud Torah keneged kulam, right? Talmud Torah equals them all. So some of the commentaries explain that I pick up a lulav, I did the mitzvah of lulav. I hear shofar, I heard shofar. I light Shabbos candles, I lit Shabbos candles. That's what I do. The mitzvah is to eat matzah. When I learn Torah, what am I doing? I'm doing two mitzvot. One is I'm learning how to hear shofar. How do I keep Shabbos? So learning is the beginning of action. So it's like an action. That's very important. But learning is also an independent mitzvah, even if it has no practical benefit, because learning is getting to know God. It's basically one of the classical understandings. The Torah, the Ramban writes, the Torah, as we mentioned this before, it's important. The Torah is an autobiography of God, whatever exactly that means. You want to know who God is? Hashem, Hashem, Arachum, V'chanun, Erech, Apayim, V'rav, Chesed, V'yemet, right? The 13 attributes of God. But there's 613 attributes of God and many side attributes, things that aren't directly attributes. You know, Torah is not only the mitzvot. So the God wrote an autobiography. You love Shakespeare, so you read everything that Shakespeare wrote. It doesn't have to be practical. You memorize Shakespeare. You know, I don't, do they still have to memorize that today in high schools? I don't know. When I went to high school, we had to memorize parts of Shakespeare. I don't know if it's like that anymore. I know this year in chat, they're not doing like Shakespeare in grade 10 because they called the corona. They don't have enough time. So they cut out Shakespeare. I don't know. That's like, how can you cut out Shakespeare? For Teichten, for Besser. No, isn't that what they say? You know? Anyways, so Lahavdil Aleph Alfei Havdalot. So one who loves Torah, one who loves God is going to study God. What do you mean practical? Who needs a practical benefit? You're in love, right? And the Rambam writes, the love of a woman, a husband and a wife, is to lead you to the love of God. The same way when you fall in love, this is the Rambam writes at the end of Hilchot Tshuva. Same way when you fall in love, the guy can't, all he thinks about is his girlfriend. He can't think about anything else. It's all day. He's like walking on cloud nine. And it rubs off usually, but okay. And then and that's how it has to be our attitude towards God. We love God. We're thinking about God. Well, wait, who cares if it's practical? Love isn't practical. So that's, I think, when we say Talmud is greater, it's because Talmud is a connection to God. And the other rabbi is saying, okay, that's very nice. You know, that's been philosophy class. That's very nice. But you know what? Let's start at the basics. Action. Do. And you know, the first reason we learn is to do. So Talmud Torah connected kulam, because Talmud Torah is a dual aspect. It tells us how to act, but it also connects us to God. So that's why Talmud Torah is so important. And that's what I believe, perhaps following up on this Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar Chizkiah would say, Kinim, we talk Masim is greater. No. Even the laws of birds that don't apply anymore, that too can be the most important. Not that it is the most important. Not that it's, come on, it can't, it's not is. But it can be studied as your main focus. If one is so inclined, though, obviously you got to use your brain a little bit. If you don't know anything about the laws of Shabbos or Lashon Hara, or how to be honest in business, don't study the birds, but that's for the birds, you know, but otherwise you gotta, you know, but in theory, that's okay. So that's another way to understand it. Now, what else do we have here? You have to work hard. You know, it's to get the men and women back together, rolling up our sleeves. This is what a rabbi's job is, to, you know, help people roll up your sleeves, get dirty, allow people. Now, the true matter, there is a Mishnah in Masechet Chagiga, and the Mishnah in Masechet Chagiga, that's the Chagiga is the last section, the last of the Mishnayot in the Seder Moed, and it talks about basically the Shalosh Regalim in the Beit HaMikdash. More or less, that's what it talks about. So there's a well-known Mishnah. Again, I'm not well-known, but a beautiful Mishnah at the end of the first chapter. The Mishnah is talking about what happens if you don't bring your sacrifice on time. On every yontif, you have to bring a korban chagiga, a festive offering. We know of the korban Pesach. We say on the brach al zvachim val hapsachim. The zvachim are the a chagiga, because the korban Pesach was eaten as a dessert. So your main course was a chagigah. You have to bring a chagigah, a festive offering. And the Gemara says, depending on how wealthy you are and how many people in your family, and that's what you would eat for Yontif, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. So let's say he didn't bring it. He didn't bring it on the first day of Sukkot. So the Gemara says, he has to Shmini Atzer, has a whole week. So the Gemara then gets in discussion, Avar Regel V'lo Chag, he didn't do it. He wants to bring it in Cheshvan. Too late. They quote a verse in Kohelet that this is a something which is crooked can't be made straight, and something that is missing can't be counted. Too bad, you blew it. And then the Gemara says, no, come on. So you didn't bring a korban chagiga. The ezem muvat sheino yecholikon. That's not it. That's a person has an adulterous union and it creates a mamzer. That's muvat lo yecholikon. That's something that can't be fixed. So he didn't bring a chagiga, big deal. You should have, okay, you'll bring it next year, next holiday. But you want to put that person at something that cannot be fixed. That's somebody, God forbid, has an affair and creates a mamzer. And if you're going to tell me it's a thief, no, a thief can pay back the money. It's not good, but he can pay back its money. Then Rabbi Shimon says, no, muvat, crooked, means you had to be straight in the first place. Very funny. It had to be somebody who was first straight and then he became crooked. Who's that? This is a Torah scholar who leaves Torah. Elisha ben Avuya, let's say, whatever, in the time of the Mishnah. This is a Torah scholar, Tami Chacham HaPoresh Min HaTorah. He separates himself. That's really sad. Someone who once was and isn't. So okay, and then the Mishnah continues. Next Mishnah. Okay, it's very. What's the essence of Torah? Heter nedarim porchim ba'avir. It's such a beautiful expression. Annulling vows. We just said the petach. You find an opening. You have to find something. It's blowing in the wind, right? Like a person who learns Torah but doesn't have action. The wind blows him away. Heter nedarim porchim ba'avir. The fact that somebody can annul a vow, they're in the wind. It's such a beautiful rabbinic statement. They have nothing to rely on. It's like the rabbis made it up. You know, it says in the Torah, Torah is very, pretty serious. Whatever you say, you got to keep. Like the Torah doesn't have any, oh yeah, you didn't mean it. No, the Torah doesn't say any of that stuff. You got to do what you said you're going to do. There's nothing to rely on. It's in the wind, but you know, rabbis have the ability to whatever. That's what Mishnah says. Heter nedarim porchim ba'avir. Ve'ein lahem amash yismochu. Hilchot Shabbat, the laws of Shabbat. Me'ilot. Oh, chagigot, the chagigah, the korban chagigah. Me'ilot. If you trespass in the temple, you use something sanctified for holy purposes, for your own personal purposes. You take some oil meant for the korban in the temple, and you use it to fry your own cake, whatever. So harehem, also a beautiful expression. Gaharim hatluyim b'sa'ara, like mountains being held up by one hair. What's Hilchot Shabbat? Zachorat yama Shabbat lekacho. Very nice. What does that mean? I don't know. Don't light a fire. That's all the Torah tells. Don't light a fire. And Shabbat is like 5 million halachot, 39 halachot. Where does 39 halachot come from? It's like a mountain being held up like one with one hair. Hadinim, monetary laws. Avodot, korbanot, right? Hataharot, purity. Hatumot, impurity. Arayot, sexual unions. Yesh lehem amash yismochu. That's it. Read the Torah. Vayikra, boring. Korbanot, money. You know, you may find the lost object. Torah, all of mishpatim. Pay back. Pay everything. Money. That's their Tara and Tuma. That's this week's parsha. All about Tuma, impurity. The Metzora, impure. Arayot. The lots of laws of sexuality. That's God Amashi. That's the hein gufei Torah. That's the essence of Torah. So here, the essence of Torah is kinim and pitche nida. And in other words, there in Chagid, what is her really all about? What's her talking about? It's the meat and butter, your daily activities, money, sexuality, you know, service of God, Torah. That's what the Torah is all about. That's the essence. Now, it doesn't mean that it's more important. It just means that's gufei. So it's just an interesting expression. You hear the different ideas of the rabbis, and you know, gufei Torah. Again, often rabbis are talking to their own time and to their own people. What is the essence of Torah? You know, in every generation, they'll tell you this is the most important, that's the most important. So I just find that, you know, when I read this Mishnah, remind me of that Mishnah. But it's a little bit unusual. The Mishnah in Chagiga makes perfect sense. It's a beautiful Mishnah. The language of the rabbis is so beautiful. And it is, you come to this Mishnah, kinim, and a lot of people don't know what kinim are. Pirchei nida, it's a strange expression. But okay, so it's harder, it allows things to get done, you get our hands dirty, whatever it is, that's the, or even kinim and nida are the gufei Torah, or even things that don't apply are still really, really important. Now, the second half of the Mishnah is also very difficult. Tikufot. So I saw in this Morris writing, Tikufot means astrology. It could mean astrology. The Rambam wouldn't say that because the Rambam says astrology is forbidden. A lot of people say astrology is forbidden. I don't, it could mean, but Tikufot is generally understood the calculation of the seasons at Tikufa. We're in Tikufat Nisan, Tikufat Iyar. There's six Tikufot. So, what does it mean to kufot and gematria are parparot lechokmah? I'll just say, I'll quote the beautiful Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbat says that there's a mitzvah to study tikufot umazalot. We have to study the tikuf, the mazalot does sound like astrology. You know, there's a whole debate. I know this is like almost funny for another time. Are you allowed to say mazal tov? When are you allowed to say mazal tov? Mazal Tov means that the stars should align. You're getting married. The stars must be aligning. The Mazalot. It's Mazalot. Or Ein Mazal Yisrael. You've heard that expression, perhaps. The Gemara says, Ein Mazal Yisrael. Nations of the world. So this is enough for now. I'm not expert enough in the subject. There's discussions in rabbinic literature. The Gemara in Shabbat talks about Ein Mazal Yisrael. The non-Jewish world are somehow bound by the forces of nature, the alignment of the stars and the moon and the planets and all that. But Israel, the Jewish people, are above that. Ein Mazal Yisrael. So that's the whole discussion. How can you say Mazal Tov? Okay, so we don't follow that Gemara, whatever it is. So the Gemara says in Shabbat on 75a how do you know a Jew has to study Tekufot Umazalot? That's his obligation, not just Torah. You have to study. When I teach this, like under normal circumstances, I teach it's science. It's science, and it can change what the science of the day is. Why do I say that? Because of how the Gemara knows this. So the Gemara quotes the verse. It's one of the most important verses, I believe, in the entire Torah. And it's in Parshat Vatchanan, the beginning of Parshat Vatchanan. We read it the week after Tisha B'Av. And that Moshe Rabbeinu is the whole, all of Sefer Dvarim is Moshe Rabbeinu is exhorting the Jewish people, keep the Torah, keep the Torah, you're going to go to the land of Israel. So then he says, you got to keep the Torah, because if you keep the Torah, the nations of the world are going to be blown away. Ushmartem vasitem otom, keep the Torah, ki hi chokhmachem ubinachem leinei hamim, because this is your wisdom and understanding of nations. Vamru rak am chacham hagoy hagadol hazeb. The nations of the world will say, wow, the Jewish people are really smart. Wow, they're the greatest in science, the greatest in water technology. Look at Israel, a little pitzel of country, and they lead the world in so many areas. That's what the Torah is, that's the mission of the Jewish people. So Mara says, okay, you have to study. What does the world consider great wisdom? Tekufot umazalot, the astrology, astronomy, calculation season. Today it would be computer science, it would be engineering, whatever it would be. In other words, I don't think the Gemara is saying, in other words, in that time, that's what it is. But it's interesting, there the Gemara says tekufot is what makes us, the nations see our great scientific calculations. Tekufot umazalot, you've got to study that. And here, and for this, I don't really have a good answer. Why does the Mishnah say tekufot gematria parparot l'chachma? They're the wisdom. So it could be that you're right. It's very important. It's very nice. And it's very good that the nations of the world think we're really bright and smart. But that's not what the Torah is really about us. We have to be moral and ethical, not smart. That's how we started. That's where the Mishnahs follow each other. Rav Elazar ben Azar is saying, Kol shechach masav have to be greater. So yes, it's very, very important that we impress the nations of the world, that we're an Or L'Goyim and we're the world leader in science and technology. That's absolutely the mission of the state of Israel from a Torah point of view. But at the same time, internally, we say, Tekufot is very nice, but more important is wisdom, Torah knowledge, etc. This is sort of not Torah. I mean, it's part of the Torah, but it's not pure Torah. So perhaps that's what the Mishnah is saying. Gematria is, yeah, that's parparot l'chachma, whatever. Anyways, it's getting late and I have to teach and chat in 2 minutes. So I do, but Bimir Hashem, beginning next week, I can stay. If there are any questions, I can stay a little later than 10:30. But yes, Morris, learning about God is supposed to lead us to action. That's what the Gemara says. We learn to get to action. That's what everybody said. Talmud brings to Maaseh. I just was explaining, Rabbi Akiva, the view that says that Torah is more important than devoid from action, which I think is a minority view. I think is a minority view is the idea that we're studying God. It's love of God. You study it because you want to know who God is. It's in other words, Rav Soloveitchik even would speak about that action. That's like practicalities. The true Torah scholar, he wants to live in the heavens. He wants to live in the abstract world. But we know that the real Torah is applied in the real world, not in the abstract world. But there is something about an abstract world. Okay, I think that's pretty it. Just to review, we don't have time really to review, but actions over wisdom. And that's the key point. And the machloket, the relationship, and it's not always easy to figure out. And then Torah has so many different aspects. What's the most important? There are practical parts of Torah, the less practical parts of Torah. There are parts that are dirty. You got to, get involved. You got to roll up the sleeves and get, the nitty gritty. And we want to help people and you got to work hard and we get rewarded for the efforts involved. And we have to impress the nations of the world. We have to impress ourselves. But most importantly, we have to act in a moral way and the presence of God. Okay, with that, I'm sorry I have to end and run. I wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. We look forward to seeing you on Sunday morning. Rabbi Daniel Feldman on judging people favorably. They're in the first parak in Perek Avot, Tana Kol Adam L'Kav Zechut. And Rabbi Liebtag on leading up to Har Sinai. Okay, everybody, thank you for
Shabbat
coming.
Shalom. Have a
wonderful Shabbat.
Thank you, Shabbat Shalom.
I got to run. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.